Thank you very much. Please be seated, everyone. Thank you for being here today. As you can see, we have it here in Carson City where myself, Justice Pickering.
Las Vegas.
In Las Vegas, we have myself, Justice Pickering, Justice Peregrine, Justice Douglas. You can see Justice Hardesty is in Carson City, so I get the correct city there, participating from there. Justices Chair and Say are not here, but they will participate in the decision of both of these cases, both of these issues today. What I'd like to do is, we have two matters on. If I can take the state bar matter one, I think it'll be pretty brief here, and we can deal with that. Then we'll deal with the ADK 2447 right after that. So let me call administrative docket number 479 in the matter of the amendments to Supreme Court Rule 216, client interest-bearing trust accounts, creation of a foundation. The record will reflect that we have Connie Akridge here on behalf of the State Bar, and I think I see Mr. Lefebvre here, Ms. Buckley here as well. What I'd like to do, though, is have some opening comments from Justice Hardesty, and perhaps Justice Douglas will have some comments as well, and then we can then we'll go ahead and proceed then with the witnesses. So, Justice Hardesty, if you'd do the introductory remarks on that, I'd appreciate that.
Yes, thank you, Chief. impetus for this administrative docket comes as a result of a decision by the ALPS organization, who had been administering the IOLTA program through the Justice League Foundation last summer when they decided to terminate the major portions of that contract. As a consequence, the Justice League was operating the program with the accounting assistance of the contract portion that was provided by ALPS, but most of the work dealing with the communication with banks, lawyers, the bar, and others were being handled day-to-day by the board members of the Justice League of Nevada. Obviously, this presented a serious imposition on the volunteer service provided by those board members. Dara Goldsmith and her colleagues on that board have spent enormous time maintaining the integrity and the success of the IOLTA program, and the court, the state bar, and all of the bar owe them a great debt of gratitude for their efforts in keeping the program going while alternatives were considered for ways to administer the IOLTA program and at the same time examine ways to reduce costs in doing so. After consultation with President Lefebvre and Kim Farmer, the Access to Justice Commission made suggestions to reinvigorate the Nevada Bar Foundation, streamline the foundation that currently supervises the IOLTA program, and bring the administrative responsibilities for the IOLTA funds and the program itself in-house to the state bar under the general supervision of Kim, her staff, and Angela Washington, who is the executive director of the Access to Justice Commission. This ADKT represents the beginning of that effort, and I am grateful to Alan and the Board of Governors and Ms. Akridge and the Bar Foundation for their pursuit of this administrative docket in furtherance of those conversations. So the reason that this is in front of the court is to streamline the number of foundations addressing this question and start the process by which we effectuate some cost savings and internal management of the program within the bar itself. Justice Douglas, my colleague on the Access to Justice Commission, anything you want to add?
You've stated the reasons for this very well. I would just point out that the IOLTA funds that the program has been administering, the foundation, and now going to the state bar, have been the lifeblood of our improvement of delivery of services for access to justice folks who could not afford legal services. And as much as we applaud the activity of the Justice League and their efforts in allowing us to deliver services, we are appreciative of the state bar and their support, especially the last 2 years, in promoting the need for access to members of the community, from veterans to children to single parents, folks who couldn't afford legal redress to have attorneys. So this goes a long way, and as Justice Harvestie says, it will be a better way to better utilize our funds. So I support this wholeheartedly.
Great. Thank you, Justice Harrison and Justice Douglas. We'll open it up to a public hearing now. Ms. Akridge, if you could come up, please, and we and state your name for the record, and we appreciate your comments.
I'm president of the Nevada Bar Foundation. I'm pleased to be here today, and just want to say at the outset, the Nevada Bar Foundation is very excited about taking on this endeavor and really doing a good job for being the designated entity to administer and direct IALTA funds. So I just wanted to make that statement. This ADKT really involves making a number of changes to SCR 216 to kind of facilitate the anticipated changeover to the Nevada Bar Foundation. Number one, it changes the number of board members. The board member requirement is currently a minimum of 11 and no more than 17, and it requires a certain number of lay members as well, 5 lay members if you're at the maximum, 17 members, but in any event, 4 lay members at all times. So we're proposing to simplify the rule to where there would just be an 11-member board, and at least 7 of those members must be State Bar of Nevada members in good standing. So while there's not a specific requirement to have lay members, there are 4 spots that could be used. We anticipate there will be lay members on the board by the 2 entities, both the Board of Governors and the Supreme Court, in deciding who they want to appoint. The next change would be about the appointment of board members. Currently, the appointments are made by the Supreme Court in even-numbered years and by the Board of Governors in odd-numbered years. And those appointments began on June 30th. The change would be to appoint, for the Supreme Court to appoint 2 members and the Board of Governor to appoint 9 members. Mm-hmm. And the commencement of the appointments would be on July 31st instead. Regarding the prohibition on Board of Governor members serving on the board, that would be lifted. And now Board of Governor members would be able to serve on the Nevada Bar Foundation board. In terms of the term limits, the current lifetime limit is 10 years. That would be reduced to 8 years. There's a provision currently in the rule saying that the principal office of Bar Foundation should be in Clark County. We eliminated that provision altogether because it didn't really seem to serve any purpose other than to make our Northern Nevada and our rural members wonder why we had such a provision in there. So we didn't think it made any sense to keep it in, so we took the opportunity to take it out. And then the last change is that we added a report that the Bar Foundation has to provide to the Board of Governors and the court annually. And so this is really in addition to the 2 reports that SCR 220.5 requires Bar Foundation to make, and that is filing their annual audited financial statements and regarding the performance of the recipients of the grants, including a declaration of how the recipients have expended the funds. So really, we needed the report, we thought, because the Barr Foundation does more than just administer the IALTA funds, or it will. It also does LRE activities, so we wanted the court to know, like, the whole scope of the activities of the foundation. So those are the changes, and we thought they made sense under the circumstances. If you have any questions, we'd be happy to answer.
Thank you. Any questions from any justices? Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Akridge. Is there anybody else like to speak on behalf of this petition? I see Mr. Lefevre, President of the State Bar, approaching the bench. So if you please, again, state your name for the record.
May it please the Court, Alan Lefevre, President of the State Bar of Nevada. This rule change is also rather symbolic in the sense that it reminds the Board of Governors that the IALTA monies are derived from the State Bar membership, and ultimately the Board of Governors, although not sitting on this board and making its decisions, that is the Bar Foundation's, does need to exercise a fiduciary oversight which far exceeds what it's been doing in the last 3 or 4 years. And so this consolidation under the Bar's umbrella is important for that reason. The Bar's budget is $6.5 million. This entity, the Nevada Bar Foundation, will be funded with a substantial sum. But I'm very happy to say that 5 years ago, we couldn't have done this. Our leadership in the past, including Ms. Akridge as president, assembled a magnificent staff and a superb executive director, which makes this easy to do. Relatively easy for me to say I'm leaving in a month, but it is possible because of our staff and its leadership.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Lefevre. Any questions for Mr. Lefevre? Okay, Ms. Buckley, would you like to speak on behalf of this petition?
Yes, I would, Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court. For the record, my name is Barbara Buckley, and I'm the Executive Director of the Legal Aid Center of Southern Nevada. A couple thoughts as I speak in support of this petition. 10 years ago, we didn't have much of a civil aid legal delivery system. We had a few lawyers at the Legal Aid Center of Southern Nevada, then called Clark County Legal Services, a couple lawyers at Nevada Legal Services, a couple at the Senior Law Project, and we were kind of running around like the kid with his finger in the dike, helping a couple people as they walked in our office, and really not accomplishing much compared to the need. Fast forward 15 years, we have free legal classes, 8 a week in various topics for members of the public, and hundreds of people are attending these classes. We have 8 Ask a Lawyer sessions, including a new one for veterans that was just added last month, so that people can talk to a lawyer about their civil legal problem. We have 2 amazing self-help centers to give people forms when they're sued and they can't afford a lawyer. And we have quality legal representation. We are now representing 2,200 kids in the foster care system. We're representing over 600 victims of domestic violence. Thanks to a small increase in IALTA funding last time around, we're now providing free legal assistance to victims of crime who qualify for immigration help, victims of sexual assault, where family members have been murdered, and we're able to get them on the path to citizenship. So we're accomplishing amazing things. One of the ways we have been able to do that is because of the increase in IALTA funding and other funding that this court and the commission has led the charge on. IALTA funding is 11% of our budget. So without it, we would have to cut back those services that we worked so hard to support. Our concern, though, is that we're kind of at a plateau. Where do we go from here? There's more that can be done. And I think that is why the court is considering this ADKT. And the hope is that with those changes, we won't take them as a setback, but as an opportunity to do more. Because if we can provide more funding, more services, instead of representing 2,200 kids, we can represent the 50 infants who are lined up in bassinets next to each other in Child Haven. Some of the elderly who are in group homes who don't have a voice to speak up to say where they want to go. So there is so much more critical need. What I think this ADKT does is it marries the assessment of the legal needs that are crucial that aren't being met with the money. Before, you know, we'd receive blind applications, oh, that sounds good, without looking at the delivery system. And that's what Justice Douglas and Hardesty are working so hard through the commission to do, to make sure the critical needs throughout the state are being met. So I support this petition. The only comments I would make on a few of the specifics is the composition. The composition has a certain number of appointments from the state bar and a certain number from the court. You may want to adjust those so that you have the folks who have actually been working on the commission side help, and we not have a learning curve of a number of years.
So what would your recommendation be on the adjustment?
You know, you could do half and half. I mean, whatever the court thinks is appropriate. I think one thing that you have to, of course, keep in mind is that the Nevada Bar Foundation now funds LRE, which is great, and that's working well, so none of that should be disrupted. But we also don't want the access to justice money intermingled so that we have fights that we don't now have either. And then just the second comment is, I know there's been some discussion with the co-chairs about a major portion of it going to the poor as opposed to all of it. I think in the past few years, the Justice League has kind of eliminated those projects that would be nice, but until we actually have legal representation for those critical needs, the thought wasn't to divert that yet. So that might be something the court considers. The issue of statewide support also is not in this rule, and that has been deemed a critical factor, as the co-chairs are aware. So with that, I'll stop.
Okay, thank you.
Answer any questions.
Stay around for Mr. Bibb. Any questions from any justices? Now, looking at the petition now, the petition seeks to have two members appointed by the court, nine members by the state bar, and your recommendation was to change that to more of a, well, it's an odd number, so it would be like a six and a five or something like that.
That's right.
Okay, and I'll see if the justices have any questions on that. If the state bar wanted to respond to that, feel free to do so. I mean, some of the court will take under submission and examine that, but if you want to present any public testimony on that, please feel free to do so. Okay. Don't be hearing any questions, Ms. Buckley. Thank you for coming down here today, and we appreciate all of your time, and we will take this matter under submission. Thank you very much. Next, we'll go to our next administrative docket item number, which is administrative docket number 447, regarding the alternate trial program here. And I see here in the courtroom we have some distinguished guests here, Judge Gene Porter, Judge Jackie Glass, Lou Brandon, attorney at law, and the most distinguished one, Weston Porter, maybe a future attorney and district judge or Supreme Court justice. He might even go farther up than his dad on that. But we'll go ahead and call that matter to order, and I'll make some opening comments on that, and then we'll go ahead and proceed with it. Yeah, in this particular program, again, in March of 2010, Justice Hardesty and myself filed an administrative docket petition to adopt a program relating to conducting alternate trials. This program was in addition to our short trial program, which had previously existed, but we expanded the pool of judges not only to include qualified short trial judges, but those that are retired district judges and also of senior judges as well are eligible to do this program. Again, the thoughts were to try and make Nevada somewhat special and different than other states, that we could have a program where you can conduct trials and have a full opportunity to appeal that decision, similar to the rights you would have if you did the trial in district court before a district court jury. Our further thoughts were in filing this petition that we have other alternate dispute resolution procedures such as the triple of A arbitrations and others, but the problem with that is that the appellate remedies are very severely limited, and so basically that decision, absent fraud or maybe some unusual circumstances, is final and is really not subject to a full review by an appellate court where this program is. So that was the background. We adopted pilot rules in 2010. We've extended the program through 2014, and the court felt it was about time to consider whether or not to make the program permanent now, since we've had enough time to acquire data regarding the program and to analyze it. Justice Hardesty, anything else you wanted to add as far as introductory comments before we proceed with the testimony?
No, thank you, Chief.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, we have Judge Porter and Judge Glass both here, so we'll start with Judge Porter. If you'd state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. Gene Porter, State Bar Number 1323. To my right is Judge Jackie Glass. I don't know your bar number.
225.
Mine's 222.
They were random. At that time, when I got assigned my number, it was done random. Nothing to do with seniority.
Nothing to do with Jews, with Gibbons class,
no.
Or something like that. Okay.
Well, I don't know. Maybe.
Anyway. Okay.
I'm too.
Justice Pickering, I know, is younger than me, so that is, but might have something to do with it, too. But anyway, let's get back to business. Okay, Judge Porter.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. We are here in support and would encourage the court to make the alternative trial program permanent. You, as you mentioned earlier, you and Justice Hardesty had the foresight to implement this several years ago. It's been in the form of a pilot program, and I have encouraged all of you when I've seen you privately and in non-public forums to finally take the step to consider making it a permanent program. Any way that we can expand the delivery of legal services to the public in the state of Nevada in whatever form is a good thing. This is the only program that I am aware of that takes the secondary step of expanding judicial services to the public that they wouldn't otherwise enjoy. The whole idea behind this concept is to allow litigants to go to an alternative forum should they choose, pick their trial date, pick the times they want to go, and still have their right to a jury trial. They can start at 8 a.m. if they want. There's no law and motion calendar. There's no sentencings. We get full days of trial. We were able to call witnesses over Skype. People save transportation costs. They save prep time. All of you here in front of me were practicing lawyers at one point in time. You know what it's like to show up at a calendar call and be told you're first on the stack. You've got your subpoenas out. You've got your witnesses lined up. You've already paid those experts because you're calling Mr. Smith on Wednesday morning and Mrs. Jones on Wednesday afternoon. And you come to the court on Monday morning, and the judge says, Mr. Porter, I'm sorry, I've got a criminal case that's pouring into your stack. I've got to bump you 6 months. My client then eats all of that prep time, I lose all of the money I've spent on all of the experts, and I have to start over. Just saving that cost makes this more inexpensive for any litigant that wants to use it. I know the court has a letter from Jim Holtz out of San Diego.
Yeah, and thank you, Judge Porter. We did get a number of letters. Maybe I should state those for the record just to make sure we all have the same files. We did get from James Holtz, from Stutz, Ardiano, and Shinoff, and Holtz from Las Vegas and San Diego. We received that. We've also received a letter from Philip Tiberi, from Kramer, DeBoer, and Keene. We've received from G. Dallas Horton, from G. Dallas Horton and Associates, from Joseph Guerin of Lipson, Nielsen, Cole, Seltzer, and Guerin, PC. A letter from, this one is from Nick Santoro of Santoro Whitmire. And so next we have from Sarah Suter from the Las Vegas Defense Lawyers, and I believe that's a civil defense firm, not a criminal defense association. And then finally we received one from Patrick Byrne of Snell and Wilmer. I believe all the letters were in support of the program, asking the court to make the program permanent then. So did you have any others? Did I miss any?
Mr. Chief Justice, not to my knowledge. I was especially pleased when I read Mr. Holt's letter to the court comparing the alternative trial program to the California Judicial Reference Program. I believe he refers to it as judicial reference. And I would direct the court to his concluding paragraph where he says, the Nevada Supreme Court's approval of the alternate trial format is superior to the California practice, as the parties do not have to give up the right to a jury trial when there is a judicial reference. As most senior practitioners realize, the cost of repeatedly preparing for trial, only to have a matter be continued for various reasons, is lessened when there can be a date certain for trial before the alternate trial judge. And then he goes on to say, well, I have not had the opportunity to use the program. He's waiting for the right case from a cost standpoint.
So do you feel in talking to people that maybe cases that might be litigated in California or Nevada, depending on the jurisdictional choice they use, they may come to Nevada because of the availability of this program?
They can preserve the right to jury trial. I mean, as long as Nevada state courts have jurisdiction, if they have a choice of forum, I think they'll choose Nevada.
Okay. Now, the other thing, I know there, right now it's an opt-in procedure, so if you have it, at least in the Clark County, if you have a case in the 8th Judicial District Court, the parties can stipulate into the program, and you can do that statewide as well, but there are pending lawsuits. And I know, my understanding is there's been numerous cases that have been stipulated in that maybe have not gone to trial because once the trial date has been scheduled with an accelerated time period, the parties have been able to resolve their disputes as opposed to waiting for trial dates in district court.
Nothing facilitates settlement like a firm trial date, Your Honor.
Okay. So in your view, it's sped up litigation?
Very much so.
Okay.
And just so I can have a little bit
of... Judge Glass for the record.
Judge Glass for the record. The firm trial dates is exactly what Judge Porter said. As you know, since most of you were trial judges, sorry, Judge Justice Pickering.
We don't remind Justice Pickering of that. You know,
you know the difficulty with managing the calendar and keeping those trial dates firm. One of the great advantages to this program is that when you make a trial date with us, it's absolutely positively 100% firm and nothing is going to move it. So there would be great incentive if there's going to be an incentive to settle, knowing that you're going to go to trial and that trial date is not going to be moved. There would be certainly, an increase, as Judge Porter has seen, in getting cases settled. And I know that getting anything time we can get cases settled out of our court system is a great help to all of the judges that sit in our trial courts.
Well, and I know, Judge Glass, when you were a trial judge, I think you were probably the leader in doing settlement conferences for the district. Did you, I know it's difficult for the district judges to have time to do these settlement conferences on these complex cases. So do you feel this program's maybe better suited if they opt into it to deal with potential settlement conferences as well?
Absolutely. I think this is an outstanding option that we are able to give them. And I believe that when this was originally thought out, it was kind of like ahead of its time. It was really thinking quite forward. And I think really that its time has come and that we will certainly have people taking advantage of it. And just by having those that have opted in and then decided to settle, it certainly has helped out the system.
Okay. Now, let me ask you both this. We adopted back in 2010 some rules as part of the pilot program and how it works. Do either one of you have any suggested amendments to those rules or anything else that you're proposing as part of this?
We don't, per se, Mr. Chief Justice. Mr. Brandon is here, and we were talking earlier. Lou is a very distinguished Nevada trial lawyer. And if I can invite Mr. Brandon to come up, he has some comments from the defense perspective about the jury pool.
Okay.
All of our jury pool that we get, we do ads on Craigslist, we We run ads in the paper. We have a continuing log on to a website and register as a juror and indicate your availability. And we have all of those things. And, of course, we pay these jurors $100 a day, which is a lot more than
what. And what will they make? They make nothing for the first day. And is it what is it a day from district court?
I forget.
It's lower than $100 a day.
I know that. Okay.
Mm. And food.
Yeah.
And so Mr. Brannon has a interesting point.
Well, let's do this. I know this is kind of unorthodox, we're kind of a group testimony, but I think we could let Mr. Brannon come on up, and if you could state your name for the record, then I suspect that the justices might have questions, maybe for all three of you, so why don't you go ahead, Mr. Brannon, and state your name for the record.
Lou Brannon, bar number 5880, Brannon Law Firm, afternoon, justices. I'm here to support KT0447. I did have some comments regarding their request. From a tort insurance defense, I've spoken to my carriers about this program. Some of the issues we had, number one, they were concerned as to the appealability because it was on a temporary basis. And they were fully in light of, they want to fulfill and move forward in this forum, but they're concerned about the appeal and whether or not, because it's temporary, that's going to happen if this goes forward. And granted, then that's not an issue. The other issue is in terms of the jurors that they have. The jurors that Mr. Porter is considering is people who are paid. From a defense perspective, they'd rather have people who are there who don't want to be there, who are upset that, in fact, they have to be there as a juror. So I had suggested to Mr. Porter that there's a way that we could use the jury pool system, I don't know if it's indemnity or how that would work out, and have that jury pool into this private trial setting, then it would be off the charts.
So my understanding, Mr. Brannon, is that this program you advertise for jurors to create a veneer, and then you go through a jury selection process similar to they do in district court, but they get paid more, and perhaps they might have more education or whatever background for maybe some of the more complex cases that you deal with. Then. Is that right? Or?
Well, right, but also in terms of from a tort defense standpoint, mm-hmm. Tort defense, we want somebody who's in management, somebody who's not looking at an ad who wants to be paid to be there. We want somebody who doesn't want to be there as a jury. The people, are, in terms of the defense, they're upset that they have to be there. They're upset that some of these matters are going to trial. I just suggest that perhaps there'd be a way that we can take the jury pools and bring them into this private trials setting so that we actually have those jury pools into this private setting.
I see.
That would be my only suggestion. Because I think it would be phenomenal if that could happen.
Okay. Great. Thank you. If there's no other testimony, then we'll go ahead and throw it open to questions from any of the justices. If you'd like anything in Las Vegas from anybody. Justice Hargis, do you have any questions in Carson City?
I'm intrigued by, I think it's Mr. Brannon's observation about the jury pool. One of the areas that has concerned me about the program where you have referred trials would be Batson challenges. And it seems to me that the utilization of the public jury pool might mitigate issues like that. So I think that's worth exploring. I think that's an intriguing suggestion. I'd be interested to know what Judges Porter and Glass think about that.
Judge Porter?
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. To you and through you to the venerable distinguished jurors from Washoe County. I was trying to get a smile.
I was
trying
to get a smile. A little smile.
Wait a minute, you were dueling chief judges at one time, I think.
I've known Justice Hartsey more years than I publicly care to acknowledge. Mr. Brannon brought up a very candid point, a very good point, but let me argue the flip side of that coin, all right? We've had debates for years. As a matter of fact, I attended an ends of court seminar with Judge Phil Pro a few weeks ago where we had a discussion, Justice Douglas was there, about the American jury system and American jurors. All right? I want to argue the flip side of what Mr. Brannon was saying. This program is flexible enough that if you want to get a jury of your peers, you can do so. So if you're representing two plastic surgeons in a partnership dispute and you want to try your case to eight plastic surgeons, we'll go get them for you. You got to pay for it, but we'll go get them for you. So the flip side of that coin is you have jurors who, A, want to be there. Mm-hmm. And in my opinion, when they're being paid to do a job, they listen more intently, and they're paying attention to that expert that you're paying $10,000 a day to come testify. And you all know from trial experience, you fly these experts in, you put them on the stand, you wonder if the jurors even listening to them after 8 hours. These people listen. They want to be there. Mm-hmm. So the other side of that dynamic coin is, in my opinion, you get better jurors and you get a better result. Because I really think they pay more attention, and you know, they want to be there. They wouldn't lie down, and they wouldn't come if they did.
Well, again, if you do this, like you said, a jury of 8 physicians or something, the parties would stipulate it.
Right.
So it's not they're not being coerced into that type of jury system.
It's all by stipulation of the parties, but the point is you can be as creative as you want. Mm-hmm. There's no limit to how creative you can be. While preserving the fundamental right to a jury trial.
Now, if Mr. Brandon, let's say, has a case, and he's defending a client and the plaintiff's attorney, the two of them agree to the other method of jury selection here.
I think his suggestion is outstanding, because you invited questions as to how we might tweak the program.
Mm-hmm.
If we can provide an option, so the litigants have an option, we want to draw from the jury commissioner pool, or alternatively, we want you guys to go find people for us.
Mm-hmm.
That would satisfy his concerns and also allow the flexibility to pick a jury of your peers, as I've just outlined.
Well, I guess maybe one of the advantages of this program is that if you cannot be compelled to enter this, it has to be agreed to by the parties,
right,
by stipulation. If the parties do so, they're probably contemplating the issue of the trier of fact and how that's going to be done. So they probably would agree in advance that this is the mechanism we want to use to pick a jury, if it is a jury trial, not a bench trial.
And the justice is concerned about diversity and the representation of the jurors on the panel. Judge Porter and I do many mock trials, and we bring in jurors, as he said, through Craigslist and the newspaper. And I am amazed, because I go through and help pick the juries for these trials, at the actual diversity of the group of people that we get. We get students up to people who are 80 years old. We get all representatives of all, we get African American, we get Hispanic, we get Asian, we get everything. It's amazing the number of people who reach out to us to participate in our jury trials. And so it's a very diverse group. And I don't think we would have any problem, even if we did it privately, in fulfilling that requirement for any of these trials.
Great. Very good.
Okay. I don't know if I answered Justice Hardison.
Well, let's hear Justice Hardison. Any more questions on that issue?
No, actually, I think that's a great point that both judges have made. And what I view as tweaking of the rule is to require the jury commissioner, if the parties so agree, to make that pool available. I mean, the whole point of this program is to allow the parties to fashion their trial. And who the trier of fact is going to be, whether it's a group of physicians in the unique case that Judge Porter talked about, or whether it's a standard car accident case where defense counsel would prefer access to the county jury pool. So it seems to me that if the rule allows for that, then that would be something that the districts around the state would have to comply with.
Yeah, I have a problem. The only problem I see with that is that the point that Mr. Brandon was making was you want those jurors that don't want to be there. But all of a sudden, if you're asking them to agree to be there and paying them $100 a day, that kind of undermines your point, doesn't it?
We could pay Mr. Brandon's jurors less.
40.
That's what you do.
It's 40 is the amount, right?
And then make them wait a while.
Well, one thing I'm thinking about this, though, this is part of the short trial rules. So number one, you have a complaint pending in the 8th Judicial District Court, for example. So you're in the court system here. The short trial program is part of the court system here. So the alternate trial program is a subsection within the short trial program. The short trial program uses, what, four-person juries right now for those smaller amount cases. They come from the jury pool through the jury commissioner. And also, this, your suggestion would be that why not do this as an alternative, maybe with eight jurors and all plus alternates, as well as at least just have it available under the rules.
Then. Right. Well, there's an issue though about intrusion on the privacy of the jurors in the jury pool, that you're in effect using their information for a private purpose, and that's not something they really want.
I'm not sure I understand the question, Your Honor.
If you're going to get access to the jury pool,
yes,
and you have a group of people whose information has been summoned by the state to be a part of that pool.
I'm with you so far.
And then you are sharing that information with private people outside the court system. My point is only from the perspective of a member of that pool, whether or not they would have a legitimate complaint that their identity information is being shared inappropriately, and so many people are sensitive to identity disclosure and information like that. I'm asking whether anyone sees that as a problem.
The way that our system is set up is we have retired court clerks, we have retired bailiffs, we have court reporters, and we are designed to give you everything that you get in the context of a state-run court system. And so these people are taken charge of by a bailiff, and they are supervised by a bailiff. And so if all we're talking about logistically is transporting 25 people from this building to another building down the street, you're right. I will have access to the information on the computer printout that I would get from the jury commissioner anyway. And that information is shared with the lawyers, as you know.
Right, but not normally until shortly before the...
Exactly. If we're going to take this a step further, and the litigants are going to have the ability to say, okay, we want to request a juror pool from the jury commissioner of the 8th Judicial District Court, and then we have to send a request down that says on Monday morning we need 25 jurors, it's not going to be any different, I don't see, than if they were on the ground floor here and they were brought up to floor 12. The only difference is we're going to have to get a bus or something and take them from point A to point B, where they will then be brought into a courtroom just as they would be here, and the voir dire is done, and they have the questions. And, you know, I mean, I suppose if someone wants to use a jury questionnaire or something, we'll have to arrange for that ahead of time. But, we've got a giant shredder box in our office. It's not that we're going to disperse that information. So the lawyers are going to get the information. They're going to get it the same way they would get it in the state court.
But all I'm doing is asking from the perspective of a juror who is an unwilling participant in this, who says, how do you get access to my personal information, and I object to it. It's one thing to perform jury service for a state-run organization, and it's another thing for a private group. And I'm concerned about the assurances and the good faith of everyone involved. I could see there being issues about that. I'm not arguing against it. I'm just raising a possible problem with
right.
it.
Right. Just stay with us.
I think that if you look at this as not being a, quote, private trial, that is, it's an alternate trial. It's run through the auspices of the court because they have to have a matter file with the court system to be in this. Then the prism is slightly different.
Yep.
Additionally, if we were really concerned about safeguards, we potentially could look at allowing people to opt in if they would be willing to participate in, quote, the ultimate private trial of litigants who have filed in the state judicial system but wish to pursue a different way.
Yeah, I'd be more comfortable with that. I haven't researched this.
So, and then just off the top of my head, I was just going to comment, not on, on the jury issue, but from my standpoint, my support of the program is not so much as the tort litigation per se, but as giving Nevada another tool in the toolbox for business litigation to make Nevada more business-friendly, so that business people, one of the concerns that always is expressed to us, businesses are concerned is, will the court system be responsive to our needs? Can we get decisions promptly so that we can make business decisions that affect our business in terms of dissolution, business disputes, things of this nature, and possibly tort and business combination. So to me, this is a positive toolbox, tool in the toolbox that puts us in a better situation to attract businesses to come.
Correct. One other thought I had on the jury issue is right now we have trials in the Complex Litigation Center on 6th Street, so the jurors have to go from the RJC on 3rd Street to 6th Street. As I recall, I used to have parking spaces in the bottom floor of that building. The courtroom is on the second floor, so I think, for example, in your building, Judge Porter, I think on Bridger, I think you have a bottom floor, as I recall, for extra parking for guests and all, and that people coming in.
Oh, I think accommodations would be preferable. It's just the person who says you're misusing my information.
That's a great point. I agree with you.
Yeah.
But it certainly would be easy, like it is to get to the Complex Litigation Center, to direct a group of people to say, here's your assignment, this is where we need you to go, and we need you to show up here at this time. Mm-hmm. We have plenty of parking. It would
don't have to park at the RJC.
I think Justice Pickering's observation warrants some review, but I'm not sure that this is any different than the short trial program, where all of the judicial officers in that program are not elected judges. They're appointed judges. So the parties, in effect, under this program can enter a contract and pick their judge. And as long as it's court-ruled sanctioned, it seems to me that you can take advantage of all the court access and resources and jurors, just as we do in the short trial program today.
Yeah, I think that's true, because we have you're either a commissioned short trial judge by the district court, or you're a senior judge commissioned by the Supreme Court, or you're, like both of you, you're former district court judges with enough years of experience to be qualified to be judges under this program. So, anyway, any other questions from the justices?
I have one. Have there been any appeals to our court out of this program? I haven't seen any.
Not that I'm aware of. I know that Judge Stubel did a bench trial, and there was some discussion on the street about the unhappy party with that decision appealing, and I don't know. I have no idea if it ever made it.
I haven't
here.
Seen any. I was just
perhaps it's been appealing. It's working its way through our system.
I don't know, but
at least they're eligible to appeal, and they have that.
So they're ending there. This is a good thing.
Yeah.
They're ending there. This is a good thing.
Yes, yeah, it is. Okay. If there's no other comments, we'll go ahead and close the public hearing and take this matter under submission. Thank you all.
And by the way, Judge Glass and I both support the creation of the appellate court in the state of Nevada.
Great. Well, we appreciate that. If you tell your clients and associates, we appreciate that, you know, for court improvement, then.
But thank you for holding this hearing and hearing our testimony.
Very well. And it'll be under submission, and we'll be in recess until the next call to court.